Blog Talk Radio.
Happy post-Thanksgiving weekend edition of the VOF, Voice of the Fans. That's what we do every week. Every Wednesday you can find us. Every Wednesday, 8:30 Pacific Standard Time, you can tune in and catch us, giving us our hot topic, giving you hot topics to debate, talking about the NFL, what transpired last week, the games coming up this week, and then everything else in between. So once again, welcome to the VOF. This is the Cam and Klee Show, week 13. Wow, what a week it's been. What a season it's been. Not quite over, but we're having a lot of fun with it. We have some interesting things transpired over the weekend. In particular, the game with the Oakland Raiders and the Denver Broncos. We had the incident with Aqib Talib and Michael Crabtree getting after each other. As we know, a year ago, Talib snatched the chain off of Michael Crabtree, which caused some uproar within not only Aqib Talib snatched the chain off of Crabtree last year, caused an uproar on the Raiders bench, but there was nothing transpired from it after that. But we know Michael Crabtree was ready this game by taping another chain to his neck. Now Talib, I think, got two of his chains, Cleavon. What do you think of that?
Man, it's Debo in full effect. I mean, I'm just saying, you probably shouldn't be wearing $200,000 chains in the middle of a game, and especially if there's nothing you can do about it. If someone like Talib takes it off your neck and runs off with it, man, it's just his. What are you going to do about it? If you're going to do something about it, do something about it.
Well, he's trying to fight back. Well, you see him trying to fight back, pushing him into the sideline, pushing him into the media member, pushing over a cameraman. I mean, he tried – I don't know how his helmet came off, but he tried to throw a couple punches. Might have got caught with a right hook, it looked like, and might have a black eye in practice this week. It was kind of wild. Do you think I thought the two-game suspension was adequate. I don't necessarily care for the NFL – you know, the players have their right to challenge and appeal the suspension, but I thought the NFL should have stuck with the two-game suspension. It was a bad look on both guys. It was a bad look on the NFL in general. What do you think about the two-game suspension that has been appealed down to one?
Oh, I definitely think the two-game suspension was adequate. I mean, like you said, the optics – especially considering what the NFL has been going through the last couple of years, it just wasn't something that they could, you know, endorse. I mean, they without punishing it, I'm not going to say to the fullest extent of the law, because obviously Roger Goodell having complete autonomy about those things is appropriate. But at the same time, I think that two games is certainly something that you know, any NFL fan can live with. I mean, just considering what it is that they were doing and just the way it looked. I mean, it was a crazy fight.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It wasn't the best appearance of either individual, but, you know, it is what it is. Also, coming down today, on another note, the owners and the player coalition came to an agreement where it looks like the players are going to get around about $80 million over the next seven years. It equates to about $10 million a year to help them with various causes. What's your thought on the player coalition in conjunction with the owners? And is it enough? Is this something the players should be taking? What's your thoughts on this?
I think it's a gesture of goodwill. I think that, as we all know, the collective bargaining agreement is coming up in a few years, and I think that given all of the negative publicity and all of the back and forth between the two sides, that, you know, from a you know, a layman's eye, it looks like they're probably not really going to come up with an agreement, and that, you know, lockout is pretty imminent. So I think there's probably something that they were trying to do to kind of dangle a carrot in front of the players and say, hey, we are, you know, on your side, and, you know, this is something that we're going to work with you with regards to trying to get something done. But I think that it was just kind of smoke and mirrors, to be quite honest with you, something that they were trying to attribute to goodwill, and we'll see how the players respond to it.
Well, I think my initial thought was, and excuse me for not having all the specifics on the deal, I'll definitely have this next week, but the NFL and the players union have not been on the same page, as we know, for, you know, since the initial lockout, and probably even before then. The initial lockout I'm talking about of 1989 or 87, excuse me. And so I think this was actually a step in the right direction, because it does show some sort of willingness to unite and be partners with the players. Roger Goodell has heard the players loud and clear. He's actually participated in some off-the-field events that would educate him things he probably had no idea was actually going on. Hence, the bail situation where black individuals are being given a higher bail for the same crimes as Caucasians, and that's been extremely unfair. So we know there's injustices there in the criminal justice system. He's participated in that, and he's seen that firsthand. He also knows that the players are dealing with issues, and that's a lot of his players, I might add, are dealing with issues that a lot of other owners are unaware about and, frankly, haven't dug deep enough to understand the issues. So by him actually trying to understand these issues, is he's seen that some things are unfair, some things are unjust, and hence he signed the letter agreement in conjunction with Doug Baldwin and Malcolm Jenkins. They penned the letter to Congress stating that something should be done about this. So he's kind of putting his money where his mouth is, actually. And so this money is coming from the NFL. I think it's a show of good faith. I think it's a step in the right direction. Hopefully more can be done about it. But they also want to educate people of color in the community of how to get out of certain situations. And then they want to attempt to increase the community's awareness. So those are some of the focus that the NFL has by donating this money or putting up this money, that players will be able to, in their communities, via their their foundations and charities, draw upon this money for the needs of their community. I think that's a good thing on the surface. We'll see how deep it goes, and I'll be interested to see when this money begins to get allocated and how exactly it's going to be allocated. We'll have more details for you to come. But on the surface, I think it's a really good thing, a really good start. I'm going to play something. I'm going to attempt to play something, audience, so please bear with me. But I had a question from Mr. Cleavy Wonder to Sean McVay. Let's see how this goes. Can you hear this at all, Cleavon?
I cannot hear it, my brother.
All right. Well, I won't play it any longer. It's Sean McVay's response to your question in regards to his adjustment from OC to head coach of the Los Angeles Rams. And essentially he was saying it's not all on him. And he, with great energy, great vigor, excitement, he does state that he does have a lot of experienced people in the building to help him through the process. He didn't. He all but said he focuses on offense and not and let the experienced people do their job on the other side of the ball. Also, the issue was brought up here recently that maybe he's hand-holding Jared Goff a little too much. And he had a unique response to that, and it was kind of a funny response. He says that that's a disservice to Jared because Jared has the option of tuning me out or listening to me once we give him the play before the 15 seconds is up. Jared can tune me out or listen to my suggestions. And what he does with that information, he's on the field. He's the one that's making the plays and going through the mechanics and has to make the proper reads when the time comes. And so he thought it was clearly a disservice to Jared, the talk of he's doing everything, Sean McVay is doing everything but throwing the ball to the receivers. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I would definitely agree with that because it depends on who the quarterback is. I mean, you take, for example, you know, someone with the, you know, physical attributes of a Brett Favre, he and Mike Holmgren, who most consider, you know, an offensive guru, butted heads quite often. And, you know, it's just like a pitcher that's, you know, shaking off a catcher when he's trying to, you know, give him a certain, you know, pitch to throw in a certain situation. He just sees it differently, and he's just not – he doesn't want to throw the curve. He wants to throw the fastball. He wants to throw the slider. Same thing with NFL quarterbacks. I mean, you see the defense in a certain way, adverse what the quarterback – or, excuse me, adverse what the coaches are seeing. Sometimes you either have to ad-lib, you have to, you know, improvisate, or sometimes you have to do things, you know, slightly different. So the fact that Jared Goff has been – you know, very responsive to what McVay has been trying to say, which, in my opinion, is very different from what Jeff Fisher was trying to ask him to do last year, which is why Jeff Fisher isn't there anymore. I think that they have a certain level of confidence with regards to what it is that McVay is seeing and what is he seeing, and they're, you know, somewhat on the same page. If the two of you are on the same page, or you think that your physical attributes can somewhat compensate for what the play call has been and you see things differently, or the play breaks down and you do things, you know, in a less conventional way, then that's one thing. But if you have the confidence of your quarterback that he has confidence in you and what it is that you're calling and how it is that you're seeing the field, and you guys get closer and closer to the same page, you know, some type of synergy starts to, you know, evolve and develop. And depending on who your offensive coordinator is or who the person is calling the plays, in this case would be McVay, then you have more confidence and you trust the process a little bit more. There are certainly some instances where quarterbacks don't really trust the process with regards to what, you know, the play calling is, and they ad-lib. They do their own thing a lot more. I think the fact that Jared Goff has kind of bought into what it is that McVay is seeing and what it is that he's calling in certain situations and scenarios is can only help them down the road.
Okay. With that being said, and I think you're right. It's a kind of a partnership that the quarterback and the play caller, the offensive coordinator, have to kind of make things work and to benefit the team. With that being said, do you now believe in the Los Angeles Rams?
You know, I wouldn't say that after last week's performance that I believe in them any more or any less than I did previously.
Oh my goodness,
I think that it's been if I may be allowed to finish, I think that it has been a miraculous turnaround from where they were last year. They're leading the NFC West. They are a playoff team. They have definitely turned their offense around. I would not say that their defense is any worse than it was last year. They have some real, you know, hog dogs up front, a.k.a. Aaron Donald and Mr. Brockers. So, yeah, I think that they definitely overachieved, in my opinion. And I give Sean McVay a lot of credit. They have definitely overachieved. They were not a playoff team going into the season. So the mere fact that they're ahead in the NFC West on a team that's won the division, you know, for the last 5 years. I mean, I think that that says a lot for the coaching staff. And again, as I was going to say previously. Excuse me?
Okay, who's won the NFC West the last 4 or 5 years?
The Seattle Seahawks have won the NFC West for the last 5 years.
In those last five years, the Los Angeles Rams has consistently beat the Seattle Seahawks. So all of a sudden now they're overachieving.
Because in those same five years that you're aforementioned, they have never made the playoffs. They have a legitimate chance to make the playoffs.
Okay.
They have never done that previously.
No, they have a legitimate chance to make the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs by default. They can lose all their games and still make the playoffs. Right now, what they're showing is that's completely untrue.
That is completely untrue. If you look at the NFC standings, it's pretty unlikely that the second place team in the NFC West will make the playoffs. The two wild card teams will come from the NFC South. So it's going to be a battle down to the end to see who will win the NFC West who gets into the playoffs. Carolina is 8-3, the Saints are 8-3, and the Atlanta Falcons are 7-4.
There's no battle in the NFC West. That's already been decided. Sir, excuse me. That's already been decided.
I beg your pardon.
There's no battle to win the AFC NFC West. One team is eight and three on their way to being 9-3. While there's another team, the second place team, I think, is floundering around and suffering from injuries to their historic defense. And they have a quarterback who is going to be wore out by the time playoffs comes, because he's going to have to do too much running the ball, passing the ball, being creative, making big plays. He's just going to have to do too. He's going to be wore out by the time playoffs comes. That's not even worth discussing. I'm going to save my breath for when I'm 100 years old and I can still have this breath to talk about other things. The NFC West has all been decided. There is a big game coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend, that will decide the winner of the NFC, not the winner of a division, the winner of the conference itself. And hopefully I'll make it to that game. But I asked you if the Rams, if you have any more confidence in the Rams, because you picked the New Orleans Saints last week to win, and, you know, we saw what happened there. As we both picked the Jacksonville Jaguars to win, Arizona stepped up and won a big game. KC, we both picked Kansas City to win. Buffalo stepped up and showed their wares. Tyrod Taylor, and they played inspired football because they wanted to prove that Tyrod Taylor is a half-decent quarterback. So it's obvious that he has a locker room there in Buffalo. And I want to ask you a question about, obviously, Seattle Seahawks beat up on the 49ers, but has a new era began in San Francisco? Has the Garoppolo era began? Because I think as soon as he got the ball, he marched right down the field and put the ball in the end zone. Granted, it was late in the game in the fourth quarter, but that's what I saw. Has the new era began in San Francisco?
Yeah, as you mentioned, he came into the game with 42 seconds left and was able to get them across the threshold to get that final touchdown, a meaningless touchdown in a game that they lost. But, yes, if you want to say that the Garoppolo – era has begun, I wouldn't say it's necessarily begun. I thought it was very childish and immature the way the San Francisco 49er fans reacted to Jimmy Garoppolo coming on the field, given that C.J. Beathard had pretty much given him, you know, his heart and soul and basically was walking off with an injury. It was very disrespectful there. Hopefully they can, you know, change the culture and the climate down there and try and let the fans know that, hey, that was not okay. You know, we'll see what Garoppolo has to offer. apparently he's going to start this this Sunday, and you know, we'll see what he can do. You know, backing up Tom Brady in a Belichick-style offense does not necessarily make you, you know, heir apparent to a, you know, a great career. I mean, we've seen this happen with other quarterbacks. You know, perfect example, a gentleman named Matt Flynn came over from the Green Bay Packers, you know, who threw 6 touchdowns, you know, in the, you know, last game of a, you know, not a, I won't call it a meaningless game because no NFL games are meaningless, but in a game that really had no significant outcome, whether they won or lost, brought him in as a free agent, and he can even beat out Russell Wilson. So, you know, it just depends on what you're seeing. I won't say that it's that time just yet. I thought it was a little curious, given the quarterbacks that are coming out next year, that they wouldn't make that trade for Garoppolo. But, you know, he has his opportunity now. You know, C.J. Brown's a little bit banged up, and, you know, we'll see what he does with it. Great job getting that touchdown in the last 42 seconds of the game, where no one was really paying attention.
Okay, yeah, I like how you threw that last little comment in there. Looking back at last week, we have something to update here. We have the gap has narrowed very as it should. The gap was narrowed in the points against the spread. 21-20.
I'm sorry. Did the Dolphins here cover that? Did the Dolphins cover that 17.5?
Well, no, the Dolphins. It was 18.
So they didn't cover. So they didn't cover. Okay. I implored you to take that back last week, but you were pretty confident. Okay. And what else happened?
It was 18. Okay, it was 18. They lost by 18
okay,
points.
Okay, so they didn't cover. So the Dolphins didn't cover the spread. Okay. And what else happened?
No. But the gap is narrowed overall for the season. It's 21 correct picks over to 20 correct picks. Okay, you're at a 58% correct for the year. I'm at 55%. Again, the gap has narrowed.
Okay.
Is a point I was making, sir. All right, and then somehow we're tied at 68% cumulative correct picks versus and picks against the spread for the season at 120 correct picks apiece at 68.6%. So as the NFL season comes down the stretch, it's about time for me to make my final kick into the backstretch here. Points in our confidence pick, there's a clear winner as it appears as we're in week 13. Somebody's at 136 correct at 75%, and somebody's at under 70% at 118. I'm not going to mention any names, but you and I'll just say this. You had 73% correct last week, and I think for the fifth time in the season had 100% correct. As Kansas City hurt you with their loss. Baltimore, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, New England, and Philadelphia yet again won the game. And we'll talk about Philadelphia coming up and their opponent coming up this week. Why delay it any further? Your confidence pick looks like it looks like the Rams are slowly creeping up your board. Last week you had them at 9. This week you have them at 5. So they are creeping up a little bit in your supremacy rankings, which show you do have. They beat New Orleans, so you had to put them above New Orleans. Carolina, Atlanta, we agree on. Jacksonville, we agree on. Actually, Seattle slipped into my top 10 simply because they have number 3 in the quarterback position. And I guess you're going to tell me that they have newfound health on defense or their coach is the second best coach in the NFL or something like that.
No, all I'm going to say is that they won a game that they were supposed to win. They won it handily. They're dealing with some adversity. The strength of their team has been depleted by injury. And so they have to find a way to adjust. And the first game that they've played since that they found a way to win.
They were playing the one-win Niners. I mean, adjustment or not, I mean, they were playing the one-win Niners. Nonetheless, you want to tell the people how you have the Los Angeles Rams jumping up 4 spots in your supremacy ranking? I'd like to hear that explanation.
Well, certainly. I saw the fact that the Carolina Panthers were not all that spectacular against the Jets. I saw the fact that the Jaguars actually lost their game. I saw the fact that the Pittsburgh Steelers, although they almost had that letdown that I was referring to last week against the Green Bay Packers and Brett Hundley, but they did win it nonetheless, so I have to give them their credit. The other teams in the front didn't change. Kansas City dropped the ball. Definitely laid an egg. So, they obviously had to be eliminated, and, the Rams have done what they're supposed to do. Give them credit for, who they are and what they've been able to accomplish to this point, and that's where we are with that.
All right. A little modest assertion of the Rams, but I'm sure they'll take it. I had the Rams with having a good win over the Saints. That was pretty impressive. The Vikings were impressive too, fairly impressive. And the Bills, I'll give the Bills credit for beating up on the Kansas City Chiefs, who look like, I think it's time for the young quarterback to get some playing time. So when it does come time for to bench the quarterback in the playoffs, this young quarterback will have some game time and game reps under his belt. And you don't fall into a situation like the Miami Hurricanes did, tossing in a young quarterback who has zero experience in crunch time and he does nothing for you. Would you say it's time to give Patrick Mahomes some time?
Certainly not. Patrick Mahomes' time will come soon enough. It will most likely be after Alex Smith leaves in free agency at the end of this season, and he'll have plenty of time to do that. At the same time, those guys are 6-5. They're right there in the playoff hunt. Why shake up things right now? Why not just let things play themselves out? We saw what happened in Buffalo when they thought that it was a good idea to kind of try and shake things up. And let's just see what we have going forward for the future. And it just ended up being 5 interceptions in the first half. We have absolutely no idea what Patrick Mahomes is capable of. We know what Alex Smith can do. So you should really go with what you know and let things play themselves out.
They lost 5 games in a row. Patrick Mahomes and Peterson are not the same quarterback. I don't think Peterson have a liver arm than your girlfriend. So there's a big difference there. Peterson wasn't also taken in the first round. So that was a 5th-round quarterback, and that was an abomination. We all agree with that. And by the way, while we're speaking about quarterback changes, we didn't talk about Eli. Is Eli getting fair treatment in the New York from the New York Giants? Now, their season, as we know, they have 2 wins, and they decided to go with Geno Smith, which I think the coach has all but lost the team and lost his job in his performance this season. But should they be benching Eli? Is Eli getting the raw deal? What do you think about that?
Eli Manning is absolutely getting a raw deal. I mean, I think that we've forgotten that there is no Odell Beckham Jr. There is no Sterling Shepard. The running game is abysmal. You can't put this all on the quarterback. And in addition, you're talking about someone who started 210 straight games. He's a 2-time Super Bowl champion. He's a 2-time Super Bowl MVP. And again, like you said previously, this will be the end of Ben McAdoo not only having a head coaching job, but perhaps having a position in the NFL, period. We all know that the Manning family is royalty. Let's just rewind 2004 when they simply said, Eli Manning won't play for the Chargers. There's not a whole lot of people that have that kind of clout, that kind of pedigree to say something like that. The Manning family is pretty much untouchable. I won't call them Corleone-esque, But as far as the NFL is concerned, probably the next best thing. So doing something like that to someone like Eli and expecting it's not having any ramifications, I think Ben McAdoo has pretty much been, made his own bed. It's going to be real prickly. And I think that the opportunities for him in the future will be in the NCAA. I don't think they'll be in the NFL.
Yeah, that'll probably be the best. That'll probably be the best opportunity he has to lead a group of men with football helmets on again. So back to what we were saying. I think it's time for Pat Mahomes. We saw what he could do in the preseason. We saw he had a live arm. I was saying in the first couple of weeks of the game of the season, or I thought that it Alex Smith had a short leash. He went on a 5-0 winning streak, which kind of gave him some comfort and gave him some padding. But having lost five games in a row, I think that doesn't help him very much. So that's why I think they should be going to Patrick Mahomes. He's a liver arm. He's somebody that goes downfield. Captain check down will not win you any playoff games. If you just want to be okay, you just want to have a decent record, you want the game manager who's not going to make any big plays or try to is risk averse, that's your guy. But if you're trying to win games, you can't win with Captain Checkdown. He's not going to win any critical games for you with that style of play. That's why I say get Patrick Mahomes some playing time. That way, when you have to turn to him and come to playoffs, when you have a quarterback for three quarters not throwing it further than 7 or 8 yards down the field, you can put this guy in, and he has some game reps. He has some game action behind him, and it's not brand spanking new to him having defenders rush at him. That's why I like to see Patrick Mahomes, but that's me. Games that we have coming up this weekend. I'm kind of looking forward to. We have a few big games. Maybe the Dolphins can get off of their five-game losing streak by facing the Aqib Talib-less Denver Broncos, and they're lacking a quarterback as well. Maybe the Dolphins can pull this game out. But we have the Vikings and the Falcons playing, which should have some playoff. Should be a playoff atmosphere. We have the Carolina Panthers playing the New Orleans Saints, which we have both of those teams number 6 and 7 in our supremacy rankings. And then we also have the Eagles number 1 in our supremacy rankings playing the number 10 team in our supremacy rankings. So they have some playoff implications all three of these games. Which game outside of Seattle and the Eagles are you looking forward to most?
Oh man, I'm looking forward to seeing that that Dolphins Broncos game. No, I'm just kidding. I'm really looking forward to seeing what transpires in the NFC South, because that's where it really goes down between the Panthers and the Saints. That's the second biggest. Actually, that's the third biggest game of the weekend. The second biggest game being the Vikings and the Falcons. So,
yeah.
So if the Falcons don't win that game, then they could potentially fall into the abyss of, oh my gosh, they're in that same area with the Detroit Lions and the Seahawks and the, you know, and the Redskins, and, you know, there's kind of like, you know, they're scoreboard watching. If they win that game, then they pretty much control their own destiny. Now, of course, we do have, you know, my favorite player in the NFL right now, Carson Wentz, coming across the country to the 206 in a very hostile environment. I'm not quite sure they played a team quite as good as the Seahawks so far this season. And will be a very telling point to see if they're able to continue the magic that they've been able to do with receivers like Nelson Aguilar and who's that other guy over there that they have that makes plays against like Jordan Matthews. I don't know if he's a player or not. You know, They had that Alshon Jeffries is okay. They had that one running back from Miami that was befuddled down there, can find his way back to the end zone again. He's definitely got some new life. I think it's Ajayi. What is that his name?
So that guy's been
had a little bit of a resurrection since he's been traded from the 305. You know, they got LeGarrette Blount, you know, kind of the battering ram. You know, Fletcher Cox plays great defense. So, you know, we'll see if they're the truth. So that's probably the number one game that I'm the most looking forward to seeing. Oh, and by the way, your 206 pass is under review. Your 206 pass is under review right now. I'm not quite sure how favorable the results will be, considering whether you can talk to the Seahawks during the show. But I'll let you know. I'll let you know what they say. Apparently, since the Los Angeles, since the Rams moved back to Los Angeles, they're the team to be. So, yeah, we'll see what's going on with that. I'll let you know what the status is next week.
You'll let me know what the status is? Please.
Yeah,
let's
know what the status is. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about this number one game that you're so excited to see this week. Number one, let's start first of all, the quarterback is putting up 32 points a game. With the depleted defense, do you think they're going to hold him down to 21 points a game? Your guy he's running around like a chicken with his head cut off, man. And all due respect, I love that guy number three, Russell Wilson. He just is asked to do way too much. And it kind of reminds me of the Carolina Panthers 3 or 4 seasons ago when they were allergic to getting Cam Newton some help. That's what the Seahawks has turned into. They have six different running backs. None of them are better than the guy they cut in the preseason. So I don't know what the heck Pete is thinking about in that regard. They have the pedestrian receivers who they hope to get a big game from just one of them every week. They're just hoping that they can get a big game from Richardson, from Baldwin, from Pocket Rocket. I haven't even seen him in the last 3 weeks. So they don't. Your quarterback is. We're in week 13, and your quarterback leads the team in rushing. I mean, that says enough about their running game. So the receivers are suspect. The running game is suspect. Their defense is injured. And you pick Seattle coming out of this? You're going to go on the environment alone? You're going to go on the rain and the hostile fans alone to beat the Philadelphia Eagles, the highest team in the league? Come on, man. We'll see how things work. How that works out. We'll see how that works out for you. I have zero confidence in that game. And let me take your confidence. Let me take your confidence picks as well. Do you have the Seahawks in your confidence? Oh no, you don't have the Seahawks in your confidence picks. So you're not very confident as well, huh?
There are 16 other games, Cam. I only picked 5 of those. And again, like you said, the Philadelphia Eagles have only lost one game at this point. So, of course, conventional wisdom would say, well, let's go with it. And by the way, they are favored by 5 points in the clink. I don't think in the Pete Carroll era any team has ever come into the clink, and certainly not since the Super Bowl season, has ever been a 5-point favorite. So, yeah, give them the kudos. They've done some things. But, again, let me say again, what I am seeing is Carson Wentz. I don't see him have played that many big games. He's coming across the country. It's a prime-time game. It's going to be electric in that place. I don't think that the Philadelphia Eagles have really put together a body of work over a consistent amount of time. Again, this is only Carson Wentz's, 25th start, that they're really been tested to this point. So we'll see what they have. We'll see what happens if they get punched in the mouth.
We'll see what happens
if Nelson Agholor isn't getting open. We'll see what happens if Alshon Jeffries is not who we think he is. We'll see if that one running back that the Finns let go because they just didn't think he was productive enough. We'll see if he can get it, you know, get some holes. I think Sheldon Richardson will have a big game. I think Bobby Wagner will have between 12 and 15 tackles. I think Earl Thomas might even have an interception or two. Doug Baldwin will do his thing. And like you said, that one number three that just runs around and just keeps making plays. Well, we'll see if he has a few plays left in him.
Well, he's going to have to. It's winding down. He's going to have some plays in him just to keep them in the game. Looking at this week, somehow you think Mitchell Trubisky is going to get a W over the San Francisco 49ers, huh?
I do. I think that's a definite possibility because they have a better running game. They have a better defense. We'll see what your guy Garoppolo can do with limited information. He was kind of thrust upon or thrust into the situation a little prematurely. We'll see what he has to do. We'll see what he has to say.
Yeah, he's not my guy for clarification purposes, but he's I think he has a better chance of doing some things than the previous quarterback did, Beathard, and that'll probably get them a win on the road against the featured Chicago Bears. Another game, I can't read the other games that you had picked against. Do you have the script in front of you? Can you go down the line and tell us what the different games that we had?
I don't have a script in front of me, so I can't say different games, but I'm pretty sure that you probably picked against the Redskins, and I'm pretty sure that you probably picked the Rams to win, right?
Oh, I did pick the Rams to win. The Rams have
and a more serious question will be what do you feel? How do you feel about the other team in Los Angeles? A little bit of a resurrection. Had there not been a few missed kicks in the beginning of the season, I think things were looking quite a bit differently. What are your thoughts on the Los Angeles Chargers? Not the Rams, the Chargers.
That was one of the topics I glossed over early in the script. The Chargers, I actually picked the Chargers to win this week. They play the Browns.
Okay,
good for you.
Good for
you. 6-6 should they beat the winless Browns? Big deal. But
okay.
It appears that they
could easily have been 8-4, right?
If
Sung Ho Lee had missed two game winning field goals, I mean, you know what we're talking about? That's how the league is. That's how the league works.
That's right. Woulda, shoulda, coulda. I mean, if I was 2 inches taller, I'd be a rich man right now. The Chargers, I expect the Chargers, they're playing good football. It looks like they turned the corner. It looks like Alex Lynn has them actually finishing football games, so we'll give them some credit. They're doing some good things. They have a lot, they have all the tools. I mean, the quarterback is suspect, but they do have a good running game. They have a strong defensive line. Their secondary isn't that great, but they're bend but don't break type of defense. And yeah, it looks like they're turning the corner, and we'll see if they can beat up on the lowly Browns this week. The other game we disagree on is Tampa Bay and Green Bay. I have Green Bay beating the Buccaneers, and you have the Buccaneers winning that game. So we'll see how that turns out. I want to thank you again, Cleveland. I hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving with the family. It's always a pleasure to do the show with you, man. This is week 13. We have four more weeks of the regular season, and then we go into the playoffs. So that should be an exciting time, and let's see what happens this week, man.
I am so looking forward to next week's show. My goodness. Wow. So many, games that can tip the scale either way, one shape, form, or fashion. So, yeah, it should be exciting to have this conversation again next week.
Yeah, it keeps getting better and better. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for tuning in, my man, to the VOF. Thanks, fans, for listening. And you can find us next week, next Wednesday, 8:30 Pacific Standard Time. Thanks, Levon. Talk to you soon.
Right on, bro. Take it easy.
All right. Later.
Wait.